This is a spiraling nightmare, a maelstrom of nightmarish proportions. I'm looking at it from where I sit and seeing some of the worst, potentially worst things I could ever have imagined.
Of course, Darryl, people leaving the dollar, these central banks leaving the dollar, they're not going to the euro and into sterling and into yen and into gold secretly. They're not going into those things because they're actually much better. It's just that they're actually not that great. But it's just that at the moment it's the lesser of two evils. The dollar is the worst.
That's right.
Paulson came out and Bernanke came out this week and, you know, it was on the front pages of a lot of the papers. They were talking up the dollar. But anybody who is a professional would look at their words and see immediately that there was no plan to rescue the dollar. They were saying the dollar's going to be great in the medium term. The dollar's going to come back. The dollar's going to be this. The dollar's going to be that. But there was no plan. Why? They can't even look at the dollar. The financial, the banks are in such a mess. There are so many banks that are secretly insolvent. The financial markets are in such turmoil that the banks are frightened to lend to each other, Darryl. Never mind the members of the public. People are the banks here, National Westminster Bank here, Lloyds Bank here, are too frightened to lend to Barclays. HSBC are too frightened to lend to Barclays because they know that they're at the credit limit of the Bank of England and they're secretly borrowing in the States. When AAA-rated high street banks can't actually lend to each other through fear, what chance does the man in the street have?
That's right, and that's right. And you know, if anybody wants to know the kind of event this is, what you need to do is go back and read about what happened to Argentina not that long ago and the amount of misery that country experienced. This is even going to be worse than that. But if you want a little preview of this mess, there were people in Argentina some 8-9 years ago when their currency imploded that were out selling brand new Rolexes they had bought for $200, $150. They were giving them to their landlord not to get kicked out in the street. There were people starving in the roadways. This turned into a nightmare for this country, and in fact, the rest of the world actually ponied up a little aid for them to keep them afloat. This is not going to happen with America. America is too big to prop up once it sinks. I mean, you've got a society of 300 million people, and frankly, and no food reserves in any of the silos, the lowest amount of wheat and grain stored in record-keeping history. We're going to see some serious messes here. The 1930s is going to look like a boom period compared to what we're facing.
And the only thing that's being helped out at the moment are the banks. There is money from the central banks, from the Fed and from the government, only for banks. They've now turned around. You know, Northern Rock was bailed out recently by Mr. Darling, the new Treasury supremo, for want of a better phrase. He actually put £25 billion worth of government money up. The bank has still gone insolvent, and they've turned around and said that they actually can't afford to honour any of their obligations. Now, what's really happened here, for people to understand what's gone on, the Bank of England can't be seen to be propping up third-party institutions and propping up all sorts of people, so other types of financial institutions. So what it's done is it's gone out with one that was holding a lot of bad paper, put the money up for all that bad paper and all those bad debts to all the counterparties of Northern Rock, $25 billion, and then writing off Northern Rock and leaving that $25 billion extra cash in circulation, but making it look like they haven't inflated the money supply. It's a sleight of hand by the government.
But that's a temporary situation, because when you take money of those kind of injections, like $41 billion, like $25 billion, these kind of things end up in the pipeline. And you know as well as I do, infusions like this take about 3 months to work their way through. And the velocity of money, when it gets a larger sum, there's a change in the velocity when you actually infuse too much money. And this is all going to come home to roost in the final analysis in 3 months' time. I'm looking at January, February for absolute mayhem to start on happening, because on top of the three-month wait-on period for these injections, we've also got another round of defaults on offer next year. In other words, when these contracts were made for these housing, they were non-guarantor loans. They were given loans to people with nothing down, and they were adjustable rate mortgages. And so, of course, right now, these things are going to blow in January, February, March of next year in another huge swath, bigger than the last one, Mohammed, than the last one.
The thing is, Darrell, the key thing to look at what Alistair Darling did when he gave Northern Rock that $25 billion, he took taxpayers' money, not Bank of England money this time, but taxpayers' money, this is from the state purse, lent it to a bank that has now collapsed and can't repay the government. So he's lost $25 billion of taxpayers' money, bailing them out. He cannot be seen to be doing what he was really doing. So the whole thing is one big con, it's one big scam, where they told everybody, oh, look, we're just bailing out one company here. But the plan was always to let it fold and to let Northern Rock honour its debts to maybe 8 or 9 big companies so that they can balance their books better. This was a big con, and this man has just stolen £25 billion of taxpayers' money and illegally propped up an institution that he had no intention of claiming that money back from. In the meantime, we don't have money for education. We don't have money for medicines. We don't have money for all these different things. But when it comes to the banks, we can prop them up.
And we're talking about a banking system that, of usury that if you listen to the file we did last night with David Pidcock, the usury system is an affront to humanity in its very basis. In other words, it is there to suck the blood out of the society that it's operating in. And, of course, that is exactly what has happened in all societies in the Western world. And what we're looking at here is we are actually bailing out the criminals who robbed us.
Absolutely, are, Darrell. The fact of the matter is an interest-based system is in itself one of the biggest crimes ever perpetrated against humanity. But pushing even that to one side, the greed of these people behind the scenes in trying to maximize the leverage out of the capital they've got, trying to buy assets using these fraudulent dollars and fraudulent interest-based system,
yep,
to actually buy assets, real assets, like
right,
gold mines and production processes, different parts of the world. To swap fraudulent dollars for those, it doesn't matter if the dollar collapses now because they're already holding assets. They own the hydroelectric dams. They own the oil fields. They own the copper mines.
They own my water system in my area. Veolia is a Rothschild company. They own the water here. They own they bought the electric company here for Electricity de France. They bought the gas company. They've bought Suez Lyonnais des Eaux, which control water. They've bought the city municipal rubbish companies. They have bought every possible asset in preparation for this implosion, so that in the final analysis, they are holding the assets and none of the money. And the people holding the money are going to be left holding the bag, and that is the public and small investors. And it's the big elites that I've been talking about from day one who are holding all of this value, and they're holding the hard stuff. Now, Mohammed, it started earlier. We talked a little bit privately about this stuff actually starting in the beginning of the 90s with places like Enron, WorldCom, Adelphia. The list goes on, but they actually were doing similar kinds of thefts, and it was being done by the same group. The same people, the Bernie Evers of the world, and a Zionist, a clear Zionist, a clear insider with the bankers, and he stole wholesale from everyone. Now, you want to give a little explanation on how some of these guys were stealing?
Right. Well, let's cover these. These were very similar in nature. They were using the principle of these derivatives, these new financial derivatives known as swaps. What Enron did, they became the world leader in energy swaps and the energy swap market in the first instance. This wasn't the cause of their downfall. I'll cover that as well. What they did was they went out and they said, okay, let's build a nuclear power station. They got planning permission to build a nuclear power station in some place in the world. And they organized a bank loan during the construction period with drawdowns and all the payment legs that would come out from that bank and then coming from the bank and then going out, all the cash legs involved in that, payment and receipt legs. Say, let's argue 5 years. And then they said, we then have revenue coming in from this of energy sales to either energy companies or the retailing public, whatever, for the next 50 years. So each of those becomes a leg on a swap.
Yep.
One is the borrowing side, and the other is the revenue. And they do something, as you know, Dal, the NPV. They net present value both of those off, and they say, right now, we can sell this off plan on a swap contract, and let's say that by the time we've netted off the costs versus the income, it makes $10 billion over the next 50 years, I'll sell it to somebody at $8 billion net present value, a discount of 20%. That person, I sell them the swap. At this point, they're going to pay me $8 billion right now for revenue for a nuclear power plant that's not even been built.
Not even – well, all it is just past the paper approval stage of being built, but not a single other thing has been done. Basically, a contract has been penned to have this thing happen someday in the future. And basically what they've done is what? Got the money up front for a transaction that hasn't even taken place.
That's correct. And and Enron were the first ones to do this, and they did this several times. Then other people in the energy market started getting into
Dynergy Energy, yep.
They all ran out, and even in other parts of the world started trying to copy what they were doing. So then it became oil plants as well. You know, well, we found oil here. We're going to sell it all off on a derivative, on a swap contract basis. And if you sold the swap to me, I can now sell it to somebody else who wants to buy it for $8.5 billion, and I'll make actually $500 million myself on the back of the contract, without actually having done anything either.
And none of this has ever moved from a piece of paper.
That's right. Nothing was built. Now, that's not what collapsed Enron, but that's what they became good at. What collapsed them was that in order to finance a lot of these transactions that they were creating, these energy derivatives, they needed to raise money that they couldn't be seen to be borrowing on the balance sheet because the sums involved were far more than Enron was worth. They were creating contracts for scenarios that were far bigger than the company was ever worth. So they had to do it all using what are known as SPVs, special purpose vehicles, which were wholly owned offshore subsidiaries. And these went out and did swap contracts with the banks, which they then used to leverage cash from other banks. We're using these swap contracts. Mm. Now, the banks that they did the swaps with, the straightforward interest rate swaps, or even FX swaps, they were allowed to do either of these kind. As a non-financial institution, banks trusted them to do plain swaps and FX swaps, fairly basic ones. But they said, listen, you're a small company. You're not a big bank. We need you to put up some kind of collateral against the margin. What that means is that if the bank starts making a huge amount of profit from this contract, it needs to be sure that it's going to get paid out. And Enron agreed with the banks that did these transactions with them that they would actually put up Enron shares. Now, that's a disgrace, Darrell. As a credit risk management specialist, this is what one of my areas of specialization. I've consulted even to very big banks in Europe on credit risk management. I cannot say to Enron, if you're having, if I start making lots of money from you, how can I be sure you're going to pay me, give me some collateral, and the collateral you give me is Enron? That's wrong. It's fundamentally wrong. I need that collateral to come from a third party.
So what they're basically doing is using their own overinflated assets to lend themselves money and then finding out later that that asset doesn't have its value but keeping the money that was lent.
The bank should never have approved that at all. When they started making money out of the Enron transactions, Enron went to the market and bought its own shares and gave shares to the banks as collateral for paying them out when everything went well, once they'd structured their other transactions. But, of course, what happened was that the guys at Enron thought they could do these derivatives so cleverly that, but in reality, they tied themselves up and made massive losses, losses that were worth more than Enron. They couldn't afford to buy their own shares back off the market and put them up as collateral, Darrell. So then they did something which is even more criminal. They started issuing new Enron shares and lodging those new share certificates that had been issued with the banks. And, of course, what does that do? You put more shares into circulation, it dilutes the share price, which means that you have to put more shares up to have the same value. It was ludicrous. It was a catch-22 that was bound to cause Enron to collapse in itself, just the nature of the guarantee. And no bank should have accepted that unless the bank wanted Enron to collapse.
Yep. And then the greedy people that were running it. And of course, most of these contracts were sold on in the secondary market to investors.
Yep.
And so there were pension funds and investment class assets that were being held by mom and pops in their 401ks and everything else that were in the tens of billions of dollars that were basically they were stuck with these things, and the banks were sitting there saying, well, we don't own them, we just were the vehicle for you to buy them.
Well, the banks were saying we simply entered into a counterparty transaction with a subsidiary. And that all we agreed with Enron as the owner is that you would give us shares as collateral and tried to make themselves look innocent parties in the process. Actually, if you remember, I mean, one of my favorite things at the time all this was going on was seeing the CEO of Enron tell everybody that there was absolutely nothing wrong with the Enron share price and the Enron's profitability. He sold off all his own options, his call options and his own Enron stock, and a week later the company was insolvent. He was an incredibly cheeky individual for such barefaced lying to the public.
Well, you know, and then WorldCom did the same, and of course, but now the greed and criminality of this fiat system that we've all had hanging over our head like a Damocles sword is no longer solvent in any Western country, and by virtue of the interconnectivity in the entire world, for that matter. And, you know, many people keep writing on the Internet and in journals, especially the financial journals. This worries me how stupid the investors can be, that China is still the right place to put your money. Now, does anybody have any brains out there? China right now, their rural communities are screaming in poverty. People think that their economy is as big as the United States. It isn't. It isn't even close. Its internal markets might be pretty big. But the fact is all these new that they've built have no customers if America and Europe go into depression. No customers. So what the heck does a city of 13 or 15 million like Shanghai, who's building all of these Nikes and all of this junk that you see all over your stores, what are they going to do when there's nobody buying their products? Of course, China's going to sink like a stone. There is a crap storm here, Mohammed. You can't avoid it no matter where you go on this planet.
I think this is one of the things that Bernanke and Paulson and such like, they're saying to themselves privately, the world's in such a mess because of Greenspan's policies that have been left to run on and the interest-based policies for such a long time that we've got into such an unholy mess now that the decision before us is what are we going to save? And it's very clear that the only thing they're prepared to save are the banks and financial institutions. They're not even prepared to intervene and save the dollar. They're not prepared to intervene and save jobs or parts of the U.S. workforce. They are absolutely not prepared to help in any way, shape, or form anywhere else. The only thing that they're protecting are the banks, and not even
now. The reason they're protecting the banks is that's the cash cow of the criminal group that I've been fighting since day one here.
Yep.
And that's why they're protecting it. They're protecting Schiff, and they're protecting Loeb and Honig and the rest of these crooks and the Goldmans and the Kahns and the Tishes of the world. And the, I mean, come on. And the, you know, look, this Zionist group that has their fingers in this banking, and then when you take a look at how it's getting reported in the press as being a minor blip, and oh, we maybe, they're saying, maybe we're going to have a recession next year. The amount of lying going on here, this, you know, this story we've just told is the real deal, and I don't think I'm exaggerating in the least about how bad this is going to get.
No, it's already that bad, and the reason it's already that bad is because the people who are able to make decisions to improve matters and prevent these things from occurring have stated unequivocally that they're not going to do that, that they don't have action plans for any of these other issues. The only thing they have an action plan for is helping out banks which are already insolvent. You know, in this country, when we had the miners' strikes at the time of Arthur Scargill, Margaret Thatcher was famously telling them, your industry's over. You have to go out there, retrain, reskill, and learn a new job. Well, you know, the interest-based banking system is technically over, but they're being told, don't worry, we will use the state purse, we will bail you out, you can do so illegally. Barclays is now borrowing through a branch in the United States from the Federal Reserve of America because it has exceeded its credit limit from the Bank of England. That's actually illegal. It should be declaring what its true capital position is, not making secret loans round the back door to bail itself out to keep going forward. If you're out of business, tough. You know, Darryl, when you lost your money, they told you in no uncertain circumstances, you know, when your shorts went against you, hey, if you don't pay up tomorrow morning, there's going to be people at the door. When it comes to the same situation applying to the banks, hey, that's like somebody turning up your door and saying, hey, don't worry, Darryl, I've got a bag full of cash here. Just take as much as you need and let me have it back later. And then you're saying, where's it from? And I'm saying, don't worry, I've borrowed it out of the local municipality funds, but we're telling everybody else that it's being used for another purpose. It's diabolical.
Well, you know, I'm not in the business of being a fearmonger here, and that's not what I've ever wanted to do with the French Connection. What I always wanted to do is stay even-keeled and present this in the most succinct way that I could so that people would have good knowledge going forward. We've done that with the historical work we've done, Mohammed. We're doing it with the financial stuff. And I've said over and over again to people listening to the French Connection for a long time, this was going to be precipitated by financial events. And we are in it up to our eyeballs. And I only see this stuff cascading from this point. Now, what is it that we can do as individuals? I have told people that what we need to do here is first of all, you need a food supply in your home. That's the first thing you need in a short-term period, and you need to start thinking about how you're going to secure your extended family. But as a financial system, one of the things that the Broomsgrove Group did when they were designing what countries, as individual countries, need to support itself, they said the gold standard was an error and always will be. And that anybody who pushes anyone toward a gold standard was going to end up with a nightmare in their future. And Churchill said this as well, and David Pidcock quoted Churchill as saying he wanted to hang the Treasury Secretary of Britain for going on the gold standard. My point being, colonial script worked quite well, and it's an example that was used by both Bill Still in the Bunny Masters video, but also by the Broomsgrove Group. What they said was a responsible country government could issue money that was used as a lubricant for economic activity, but never any more than the economy could absorb through productivity gains, and that there could be no growth in money through speculation, which would eliminate these derivatives completely from our lives. Because that kind of growth in the supply of capital around the world is what has created this nightmare. We have exceeded our productivity gains by the amount of money, and what we have now is wheelbarrow loads like the Weimar Republic running around the world looking for a place to roost. That we've got a system that's untenable. Now, you being an expert in that area, I have to tell you, this whole system needs to be eliminated. What you're an expert in needs to stop being done.
Indeed. There are two major things that need to be addressed. One is obviously the abolition of an interest-based system, and the other is the removal of speculation with foreign exchanges, exchange rates and currencies. If we can actually do that, then we can bring some stability to the world. There are fairly simple ways of establishing these things as well. But these things are a very old control mechanism. They were set up from the central banks of the world now. If you read the history of them, you'll see that they were created by the British at the end of empire. And when the empire was ending, as they pulled out from one country or another, they actually established a system of central banks, which they put in the world. They helped them develop their local currency. And then in the City of London, we actually had a currency market for the 90 or so members of the Commonwealth, where we could buy and sell their currencies and speculate on them. And this is how London became, and not Wall Street, and this is why London became the foreign exchange capital of the world. And they can buy and sell countries at will.
Well, you know that one square mile in central London is controlled by Zionist Jews.
It certainly is now, since the time of Edward VII, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, Muhammad, the people who've done this to us, and there are names behind this conspiracy, they have the cash and holdings that need to be confiscated to right this ship, to right this wrong. Whether or not that'll ever take place is anyone's guess, but that certainly is one of the things that we need to put on the table right away. That the things that they purchased with this stolen money cannot rest in their asset holdings. It's an affront to us all to think that, you know, you would catch a car thief, and then when you caught him and know that he did it, you would give him the car.
That's right. It's outrageous, isn't it?
Yeah. No,
all of these assets that are owned, that should be owned by these poor countries, that they've had to sell off to service the interest on their debts. It's no good for world leaders to meet in their so-called war on poverty and war against poverty and the fight against poverty and the battle against poverty and all these slogans that they come out with year after year after year and then give some amount in aid. What they need to do is simply write off the debts and return the income-generating assets to them. It's very simple.
Yep. Well, we've been all over the place, and we've talked about a lot here. This is actually one of the files that people are going to have to actually play a couple of times just to get the real gist of it. It's an education on just how complicated the crime is, and this is one of the reasons why so many people become glazed over when they start looking at the financial system. What we've done tonight is tried, I think, Muhammad, and maybe succeeded in some small way here to simplify this crime against us all and give everybody an idea of just how the depths of it and how it was perpetrated. I mean, look, you know, as things get worse, people are going to want to know how it happened. I think this is a great first step in explaining it to them. What do you think?
What normally happens, Darryl, and what your listeners need to appreciate is that what normally happens is there is an autopsy a year or two after these things have gone on where everybody looks back with hindsight and then explains what's going on. What we've done for your listeners today is explain what is going on right now. We're not waiting for the autopsy. We're not waiting for somebody to die and look at the dead body and check everything. We're telling you now what's going on right now. So you understand the situation as is at the time of happening. Nobody else is doing this.
No, no. And not even in the financial press. It's not happening. It's not happening. Well, you know, Mohammed, I appreciate it. You and I talk about so many subjects on this programming. It's this conspiracy is really taking lives. It's killing people, and there are more people to come that are going to lose everything and possibly their lives. What we need to do is we need to cohese around these facts and the truth that people can actually read up on the French Connection, and start fighting back with information so that this stuff can be. We can actually start affecting the solutions sooner, because every day we come closer to a solution, fewer people will be suffering. And so it's not an option of whether we do change this mess. We have to. We haven't got a choice here.
And also, Darrell, it's very important that although the subject matter may sound complex to the people, what I want them to understand is there are simple solutions available, not expensive to implement, straightforward to implement, that will eliminate all of these problems. But the reason it is not being done is because there isn't the political will. And there isn't the political will. Why? Because the people who are behind all the other things that have been described in terms of the wars, the revolutions, 9/11, it's the same people.
Same people. So, and it's the same people that helps buy off our politicians and get photographs of them having a bizarre rendezvous and the rest of it, and then having can you imagine that they're voting to dismantle the Constitution in the United States as we speak? They're saying that people telling this kind of story are terrorists. Can you imagine this?
Well, we're certainly terrorizing them.
Yes, we certainly are. Oh, Mohammed, thanks for coming on tonight. We actually talk about this subject quite a bit privately, don't we?
Yes, indeed we do.
Well, you know, the work is just beginning for us. The knowledge about who's done it and how they did it is all out there for you to learn. The solutions are all out there for us to start participating in. And so that's what I'm hoping everybody does with this information, is begin to share it and start participating with myself and you and others. I didn't tell you until earlier that I did another show in South Africa, and we're talking about, of course, these same subjects, and the world is waking up to this. They can't keep this secret down. This time, I think they've really overplayed their hand, Mohammed, and I think that they're finally going to be upstaged. What do you think?
It's certainly looking that way, Darrell, and we've just got to keep the pressure on. And the people out there have just got to keep the pressure on. Keep reading, keep researching, and now also keep writing. It's certainly helping when people are actually challenging some of these people to their faces. Write to your local mayor. Write to the head of your local bank. Write to somebody that you think may be suspicious or involved and challenge them directly. Don't fear doing it. They are the ones who fear you doing it to them.
That's right. Well, that's going to be the file for tonight, ladies and gentlemen. I want to thank you all for tuning into the French Connection. And my advice to every one of you is to please take care of your families and take care of yourselves. And until the next time, please be well. Bye-bye now.
Thank you.